One of the things, especially we see it in our business, is that the younger generation doesn't see room to grow. And for our company, you know, I look at the roles that have been created over the last few years as we've grown, and it creates a career path. And you don't have to wait for the person in front of you to retire or die to get a promotion. We have countless folks that have joined our team here that left where they were because there was no place for them to grow into next. It was like, just wait for John to move on, or just using arbitrary names here, but both from a financial standpoint as well as, you know, gratification and career growth.
Welcome to the Second in Command podcast, produced by the COO Alliance and brought to you by its founder, Cameron Harold. In the Second in Command podcast, we talk to top COOs who share the insights, strategies, and tactics that made them the chief behind the chief. And now, here's your host, Cameron Harold.
So, Tim, welcome to the Second in Command podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, nice to see you. I'm kind of laughing and saying nice to see you again because I've known you for a bunch of years now. You've been a member of the CO Alliance for a few years. So why don't we even just start with that and then we'll dive into stuff around Duffney Builders and your leadership. What was it that got you to join the CO Alliance 3 years ago? Do you remember what you might've been looking for or what kind of prompted you to join?
Yeah, I was at a place. So this is I'm doing air quotes right now. So this is a family business. It's a business that my parents have started back when I was just born. I went out and I had another career path. And then when I came back into this business 5 years ago, I was really struggling with the tools and the resources and that really, you know, having an understanding on how I can be adding value in a very operationally heavy business. And so, you know, I started listening to podcasts and I was really focused on construction at first. And then, you know, I came across your podcast, The Second in Command, and really just the interviews and the conversations that you were having with folks and just the nuggets I was able to pull away just and apply those in our business was just so helpful. And then just, I guess, the more I got into it, and I think I reached out at some point to Gordy, who was with you at that point, and got hooked into the CO Alliance.
Funny, it's amazing the number of people that have learned about us from the Second in Command podcast, but now 3 years later, here you are as a guest on the podcast too. So I like that it's coming full circle. So has there been any big nuggets then over the three-year period, like any one or two big things, big takeaways for you that you've been able to kind of glean from? And some of them might be more mindset than tactical as well.
You know, I think certainly recently mindset-wise, the guest speaker, Don DePonte, there on focus and awareness in the mind, which is something that's a huge, huge takeaway I'm working through right now. But one of the things that we've really done well over the last few years, so when I first got involved with the business here, we were about 25 people. And we're now at 55, 60. And this growth has happened through COVID. And some of the tools and resources that we were able to leverage from some of the CO Alliance meetings and even past recordings. I watched the video from Jeff Smart there with the Who Method for Hiring and incorporating that process. I was a horrible interviewer before, made some real bad mistakes, and worked through that and tried to figure out how to grow from there and really following that process that Jeff had laid out. And we incorporated that with, you know, the putting together a vivid vision, and just even the journey on creating our vision. We went with Conscious Coffee there and they helped us walk through the process. And I think the process alone was well worth the cost of that. So we incorporate, you know, creating job descriptions with our vision and then taking and working through the Who method for our interviewing process has really been a big game changer for us.
It's interesting. It's just kind of the access to some of the best practices, I think, that we don't even realize we don't know until all of a sudden we're getting the exposure to it, right?
Amazing.
So one other question I've got, because I've seen you change over the last 3 years. I'm curious if this is true. It feels like every member of the CO Alliance and almost really every business leader out there, at some point we feel a little bit of the imposter syndrome. You know, we wake up in the morning and we're like, because at the end of the day, like, we're just kids trapped in adult bodies, right? We're still trying to figure this shit out. We're still trying to understand our jobs. And it's like, how did I wake up running this company and I'm not qualified? Did you ever have that imposter syndrome and how do you shed that?
That's funny. I kind of take that to the next level. If you like, I've gone through a little bit of an identity crisis here. When I came into the business trying to figure out who I was and what I could add to the business, and depends on what we're focusing on as far as our pain points, I would have to adapt a little bit and transform. I think the imposter syndrome is real. We've recently hired an administrative officer to work alongside with me because we've we've understood my weaknesses and starting too many things and not having the pushback. So some of these roles that I look around the room at the CEO Alliance, and I say, wow, like that's a real COO. And for me, and maybe this is part of my imposter syndrome, but yeah, I feel like there's, I mean, that's real. I think no matter what seat you're sitting in.
Yeah, it's interesting that we had an event years ago where somebody at lunch told me that they felt like an imposter. And I went into the room and asked everybody in the room, who here feels like an imposter? And everybody put their hands up. I'm like, well, if all of you feel like imposters, then like, how come everybody else is smarter? It doesn't make any sense, right? All right, let's go into this whole, you know, working with parents component. Why don't you start off by telling us what Duffany Builders is so we have an idea of the business, and then talk to us about what it was like coming into a family business 5 years ago.
So this business was started as my father had originally started this with the idea. He was a carpenter by trade, wanted to have a way to save for retirement, provide for his family. And at that point in time, this is in the early 80s, especially in this field, it wasn't really an option unless you started your own business to be able to start your own IRA, et cetera. So my mother's focus was on the bookkeeping and the office management side of things and balancing that with raising my brother and I. So that business kind of slowly grew for a long period of time. Slow growth has always been the process here. It's really relationship based, really delivering, outworking everybody else, that old school kind of mentality, that work ethic. And so for a long time, the office was in the corner of the kitchen. The wood shop was in the basement, and then eventually built a shop outside. And then, you know, fast forward, my brother graduated college and came into the business and was really right hand with my father in maintaining and growing the business from there. And then, sorry, I know I'm kind of like skipping around a little bit, just the story of the family business. So I went out, had another career in finance, and then got to a point where I was seeing the strain for my family as far as I was out. I was the rainmaker and the consultant. And so there was a lot of, you know, I'd wake up and leave the house before the kids would wake up and come home after they're in bed. And it just got to a point where it's a timeout here. We've always been a family of community. Sports has been a big part of our DNA. So teams is something that was really missing. And also building something that didn't rely on me to be the only one delivering. We have an amazing, I think one of my proudest pieces here, and I shipped away from using the term family business. We're really a high-performing team that likes to have fun.
Yep.
You know, so many folks here that will just pick up the ball and run with it if they can help out. And that's really what you know, allows people to have that balance. And there's a couple of reasons why we've decided to grow the business. One of them is the fact that, you know, you don't have to be the only phone call. Like, you have a support team around you and people to count on. And there's we have our own little community here, which is really amazing.
Hey, you just said something that was really interesting to me. Two things. One was that you kind of almost glossed over it a little bit. You said that we decided to grow the business. It sounds like what you're saying is because was the business was doing great, was fine as it was. There's no need to really grow it, right? And you do have to make that decision of, are we going to continue to scale this? Was that a cognizant decision?
Oh, for sure. I mean, we very easily could have said, you know, no thank you to more business and get on the wait list, if you will, to work with us. And to be certainly, you know, well oversubscribed there and manage that. The piece that, you know, one of the things, especially we see in our business, is that the younger generation doesn't see room to grow. And for our company, you know, I look at the roles that have been created over the last few years as we've grown, and it creates a career path. And you don't have to wait for the person in front of you to retire or die to get a promotion. We have countless folks that have joined our team here that left where they were because there was no place for them to grow into next. It was like, just wait for John to move on, or just using arbitrary names here. But, you know, it's, you know, so part of that, the big, you know, having growth, that's something it's been important to myself and to a lot of folks here, is to be able to grow, and both from a financial standpoint as well as, you know, gratification and career growth. So that's certainly one piece. And of course, you know, at the end of the day, there's the adage that if you're growing, you're either growing or you're dying. A little bit too, and it's hard to stay in that middle place. You know, when you sit in a place where we're not growing, we're also stretching our people, where they're going to get burnt out. And so we have to. There's always going to be that in between of when you hire that next person to help, you know, take some of the workload. So there's many reasons for the growth there.
How do you think that your financial background has impacted the business? I mean, you come into it with a different lens than your dad, who was the carpenter, the very kind of hands-on, understood the customer, understood the product, probably way more than you ever will. how has your lens helped impact the company?
Great question. I think sometimes he's so astute to what's going on around him. He's, even though, been basically trained in the field, if you will, he gets it, right? The numbers have to work. It's, at the end of the day, you can break this stuff down. It's simple math, the revenue over expenses to maintain your profitability. There's, we've had some advancements in the way we've done things or changes that taking a step back and looking at it from a different lens. And maybe it's just fresh eyes. I don't know if it's necessarily the financial background. I think it's probably just just another look at it.
The fresh lens. Yeah, it makes sense. All right. So something that doesn't get talked about very often, there's an organization in Canada called the Canadian Association of Family Enterprise. And it's kind of like the COO Alliance, but they only allow family-run companies to be members. And I don't know if they have anything like that in the US, but can you walk us through what it's like being in a family business? I mean, there's the good and the bad, right? The good is, you love your parents, they're incredible humans. And then one day you just want to take the kitchen knife and fucking hack the whole family up. And then you go golfing with them in the afternoon, right? And the same, like vice versa, they think you're the best son in the world. And then they're like, God, can we throw this guy off a cliff? How do you work through those family dynamics?
Yeah, I think it depends on who you ask that to. My brother is way more level-headed than I am, so I think you get a different response from him. I'm a little more emotional and a little bit more my emotions on my sleeve. The nice thing is it's easier to have the hard conversations. You can just roll your sleeves up and say, listen, like, this isn't working. You effed up, like, or tell me where I'm wrong here, and just cut through it all. You don't have to beat around the proverbial bush. Just have the hard conversations and move forward. And, we just respect each other. We're lucky that, we're just some really good humans. I think I'm very fortunate with my parents. My dad's one of the ones you look at and you say, Mike's typically, if you think about doing the right thing, it's usually what Mike would do. And so it's easy to have those hard conversations.
Yeah. That was my experience growing up in a family business as well, was you absolutely can have those tough discussions. And the trust is there, right? The other person's not out to get you. It's not like the TV show Succession.
Right. Yeah, there's no hidden agendas. Everyone knows where everyone's going.
Yeah. So you also said something that was interesting just around the style of business that it was kind of when you came in, or maybe that what got you to where the company was when you walked in 5 years ago. And it was that work ethic mentality, right? That real kind of, we're going to grind it out. We're, the nose to the grindstone, you put in a solid day's work. But business scales differently now, where it's about working smart. It's about optimization and automation and working on the highest ROI things. Can you talk about what that transition was like for the company when working hard didn't necessarily take a back seat, but there was an additional layer?
Yeah, I'll use, I think probably a good example of that is, so our project managers are the relationship managers in our business. They're the key. They maintain relationships with our clients and the architects that we work with. I remember coming in the office here and seeing Jim, who's one of our project managers that's been here for about 8 years now. One of our key guys that deals with some of the key accounts, and he's in there and he's working numbers on a spreadsheet and get in at, the guy that he's at the gym at 5 a.m., 5:30. And then he's here in the office at 5:30 at night trying to, work on the spreadsheets. And I'm going, I know Jim's not strong with his computers. I know he's, he doesn't love what he's doing right now. He's probably spending more energy working on that spreadsheet than he should. If there was someone that could balance him out and focus on that part of the business so that he can do what he's really good at, like there's a winning combination there. And so kind of coming back to the question earlier about growing, like, so from a financial standpoint, you need to grow to support the additional resources you have. Like, so if now Jim can, let's say, we didn't do this to grow from 1X to 2X, but at the end of the day, you have to grow to support that additional infrastructure. But Jim can spend more time focused on what he does and gets energized about, instead of saying,
right,
shit, I have to go to the office and work on that spreadsheet.
Yeah, you're right. You start working on the unique ability teams, right? So if people are working in the unique ability, the stuff that they're really good at and gives them energy and they can delegate everything except that, it's nice that you're taking that down a level or a couple levels. I want to talk about teams in a second, but I also want to talk about project managers, because you just mentioned something that they're kind of a key player in the company. I've worked with a few home builders and building places, and the project manager is the key person, like more important than even the contractor themselves. It's this, how do you find great project managers? They seem like they're kind of the diamond in the rough for everybody like they must be super competitive to try to find them and keep them. How do you keep them?
We try to support them. You know, at the end of the day, the, you know, I think that's a position in the business that burnout's the highest. And so as much as we can do to support that role, I think everything else fills in. As much as we say we're, you know, no one really works for anyone else. Like at the end of the day, we work for the client, but really that role requires the rest of us to do what we can to help them. And so we focus on that, and that trickles down to happy employees and communicating with the clients and everyone. It all kind of comes together from there.
Yeah, I like it. And it's interesting because if you do kind of stay focused on taking care of them, they're going to take care of the company as well, right? So talk about the team of teams. You talked to me just before we went live that you have a bit of a culture of this kind of team of teams approach. I've heard that saying before, but I can confess, I don't think I really even understand what it means and how it operates. Can you give us some kind of background on that?
Yeah, so I'm actually looking to my desk right now. I have our org chart that we're revamping a little bit here. We've always kind of looked at it like, you know, from the bottom up, supporting as you kind of go through the company here. At the end of the day, back to this notion of, you know, our project managers, the relationship manager, that connection to the client, and then having a project administrator working with them to handle the administrative side of the business for them. And then they have on the job site, they have what we call a site supervisor / working foreman. That's, if it's a big project going on, they're directing traffic, or if something needs to be done, they can pick up their tool belt and make it happen. So it really requires these different legs of the stool. And so there's a team that somebody is going to get as, you know, to handle their project. And then as you look internally, we have slowly over time, we've built out an accounting team. We have a design coordinator now. We have, you know, we're just kind of filling in. We have a strong estate management team. And so there's these teams within the greater team that are able to deliver for the clients and give them what they need.
You've mentioned estate management a couple of times, and you said estate management, and you said another term as well. But what do you mean by estate management in the building space?
Thank you. I think we're probably better at executing than communicating and marketing sometimes. So for us, it's, you know, a lot of folks will hire us to build a house or have a major remodel or addition. And then at the end of the day, the relationship's been established there. So these are typically folks that we work with at multiple homes. And so they're not always around. So, hey, can you take care of the house and the estate while I'm away? And this isn't always like a major estate where you might drive by with a big gate or anything. And so it's just another home that is meaningful to somebody. They want it taken care of, and they want to know when they show up that the grill works, the generator's working, that if there's, you know, they just come in, they turn the key like they're going to a hotel and they're off and running, and they lock up and leave, and we're here for them watching after their property. So estate management for us is kind of slowly evolved over time, and now it's actually becoming a lead for us that we want to work in certain neighborhoods, and we have the team to do the maintenance that these homes require. And so we'll offer these services, and at some point they'll want to renovate their house and they'll call us.
I would think that that can be a massive, massive business vertical for you guys going forward. I would also think that I'd probably be the son who'd be like, hey, let me manage our U.S. Virgin Islands and Caribbean operation, or let me manage our, you know, European offices. And like, what about all these people's second homes in the Virgin Islands? Like, who's taking care of those? Do they just have like estate companies down there doing it for they probably do, right?
The total mix. We've been asked to travel a little bit. We have not at this point. I'm not saying we won't. Our focus is on this geographic area of Cape Cod. So it's a hybrid. I think people just, they develop relationships with people they trust, like in any business. And then that's how they kind of go forward with it. So you're right. Maybe there might be something there in the future.
It's funny that you've mentioned Cape Cod. I'm going to have to come pay a visit when I'm out for our CO Alliance event in September. Cape Cod has always been this mystical place to this Canadian preppy kid. So I've got to come out there one day and see what really this whole Cape Cod thing is all about. I never really even believed it existed. It always sounded like something out of the preppy handbook. It couldn't have really been real. All right. So local teams was something else that you mentioned to me as well that you have that is very different from the rest of your industry. I think the rest of the industry, the home builders, they just hire, you know, anybody that they can hire from wherever, and they're just going to, you know, show up and work on the jobs. How do you guys operate?
Yeah, so I think this might be something I took from my financial experience. So it's really that boutique experience. So to be able to deliver that what a large firm can deliver, but at a local level. So we, you know, like our office I'm sitting in now, we service an area of like about 20 miles around us. And so our team is there around this office. They live close by, some, you know, not all, but most live close by. So they can, you know, work 7 to 4:30 and then be home for dinner. Even the folks that live far away, they're still able to get home for dinner. So I think at the end of the day, we're performing in areas where people live and have close access to. And so we have one office where I'm at now. We have another office at the other end of the Cape. So there's folks that work out of that office that stay local to there. I mean, these are homes. These are, you know, things work, things don't work in construction or in the management of them. So having a local presence is important. And it's a strong local network of, you know, people have certain needs, or maybe there's something, you know, interesting that maybe happens only every now and again. We have the network of folks that we can call on, people we trust to let into these people's homes. So we have that local touch, that community feel. But we also, we can compete with the bigger firms that might come from the city that have vast resources, but they don't have the local presence.
You know, something else that kind of just occurred to me as well is the complexity of your business, because every home project is completely different. I mean, yes, you're building a home with foundation and walls and electrical and plumbing, but like every single one is different, right? And then every customer is completely different. And it's a very stressful, I've been there, it's a very stressful project for the homeowner, where I remember calling my contractor one day, to put it mildly, freaking out because they'd installed windows in my home that had a blue tint on them. And he said, no, there's like a blue film that you peel off to keep the windows from scratching. I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm an idiot. I'm out of here. I literally was in a full-on panic because every window had this blue tint.
Yeah, and they're like, get out of the house, please. Stop.
It's like you are more. How do you deal with that when you're like, I imagine that is like a daily occurrence for your project managers and for you guys as a company.
Yeah, it is, you know, and that is a challenge. I mean, we're in the business to consumer market. And so every situation is different. Everyone comes with their own bag of good things and bad, and we work through it, and yeah, you have to work through it.
Yeah. Well, and is there a way that you work through it in terms of like, I don't know, managing the conflict? Did you have a conflict model?
Great thought. As we've kind of systematized things and worked through as we've grown, at the end of the day, we hire people that, you know, the gentleman's name's escaping me, but I think you've referenced this as well, that from Southwest Airlines. How do you?
Herb Kelleher, yeah.
Smile or be happy, right? We just hire folks that are respectful, that care, that they understand the passion that goes into this business. You know, we're in the residential structure. There's no doubt about it. You know, have we done commercial stuff? Yeah, we have. But our bread and butter is the residential. And there's a lot of similarities to commercial, but there's a lot of differences. And the people that get it and that are there, they understand, like, listen, here we are on Cape Cod, 4th of July is next week. Our job is to deliver for people. So when they show up and they have their family and friends coming down, that things are ready for them. Like, we're there for them.
Yeah.
And you have to understand that sometimes, you know what, someone's going to be in a bad mood or be going through something personally that it may not. I was having a conversation with Ron, one of our project managers, last night, and he was talking through coaching somebody that's on our team about that, saying, you don't know what their baggage is. And let me share a couple insights with you. And it just kind of gives you a different lens and saying, you know what, we're here for them for a reason. We'll work through it. We'll take a vacation here. We'll get back to it in a couple of weeks with fresh eyes, and we'll move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't do a good job of managing conflict at all. I find it just, especially when I know that I'm working so hard or the team is working so hard, I always find it, I take it in a fairly adversarial way, and I wish I was better at it. I teach it. It's one of the modules in my Invest in Your Leaders course, but I always find it hard to do that as well. So what do you think on the production side, like to produce, to manage, how many projects concurrently are you guys working on?
Tough question to answer. It's not because I want to avoid it, but we have some folks who are like, hey, can you replace this window for us? Some, you know, up to the, hey, here's a, you know, a custom home build that will take a couple of years.
Right.
So we have, you know, our project management teams, they'll manage a couple larger projects, and then we'll have some smaller things kind of sprinkled in as we can. So it kind of ebbs and flows a little bit, but, you know, every team is managing, you know, half a dozen projects at a time here of various scales.
And do you use project management software or project management methodology, or is it just like a mindset around managing projects, or is that just something that the project managers bring to the table as a unique skill set?
It's a I think a combination, especially as we've grown. We're getting more structured in our system. There's various project management tools out there for our industry, and we've been transitioning between a couple of them. But it's really, communication is the biggest part of our business. The projects change. They're not, it's not like you establish a schedule at the beginning of a project, which we do, but it will change. Workforce, availability, weather, and these are smaller, in the grand scheme of things, projects, right? From a lot of our big ones go from 1 to 2 years. And so it's really the communication aspect of it and in leveraging the technology behind them.
And you guys are running, you said 55-ish employees, but then you've also got all the sub trades, right?
Yeah.
So you've got, like every contractor that comes onto a job site is not an employee. So you've got the really hundreds of these relationships that are out there as well. At the head office level, like with you and your brother, or let's say just you, how many of the employees do you really know, and how many of the sub trades do you really know? Like, do you get out there and get your hand in the can? Do you get out on job sites, or are you removed from that a little bit now?
I'm trying to get on the job sites more, so I can establish more of those relationships, so that as things come up, challenges on their side or ours, that we can work through them. Back to the earlier comment, I'm here to support as much as I can, so. That for me is getting my hand in. I joke around and tell people, but they don't want me swinging a hammer. They're going to be, we'll be fixing it.
Yeah. I just think back to my days running a house painting company that I could technically paint a house, but I didn't like painting. And, I would show up on the job sites more to take care of the team, make sure they had what they needed, show up with some drinks or some, Dairy Queen or something just to kind of make them happy. But also just to really stay present and understand the job, right? To kind of stay around it. But it was also part of the culture. So I'm curious, how do you build a company culture in a kind of blue collar construction? Certainly not everybody in an office. How do you build that kind of a company culture? Do you have that thought out in your vivid vision?
So I think a challenge is, ever since I can remember, there's a challenge between the field and the office, as described. We have 20 of our 55, about 25 carpenters. And so it's like, what are they doing in the office? And, and I think it's usually not an understanding of what goes into someone else's work, right? And so kind of like me, to your point, going out to the job sites and seeing what's going on with different folks and the challenges that they're facing, we try to get people together as much as possible. We have a golf tournament coming up through our local home builders chapter, trying to get as much of a mix of people in there as we can. We have a company outing that we're planning for right now in August to get the team together and spend the day together and make some competitions happen and get to know each other a little bit better. So as much as possible, just kind of finding ways to get people to connect.
Yeah, it makes sense. All right. So I want to talk a little bit about you and kind of the people on the team. I mean, you're sitting there working on your skills. You're trying to grow as a leader. Do you bring any kind of a mindset or methodology towards growing the skill sets of your people at all?
So we've been kind of working through definitely a mindset. I think it's a growth mindset that we have here that we all need to be continuously learning. My father, Mike, who started this business and is really kind of, air quotes here, retiring, but he's still trying to grow and learn and see what's going on as the world changes around him. So that, people need to have that mindset here. And so they'll probably hopefully make fun of me. I bring in books and buy books to bring and share in the office. We're renovating the office now. And we're creating a little bit of a library area so that people can grab those books that I think look valuable lessons. We've started folks enrolling in the Investing Your Leaders course that you put out there, which is fantastic. There's so many skills that you kind of take for granted that people know how to manage their inbox, that know how to handle conflict or in dealing with situational leadership. So there's continuing to push folks to grow, and a lot of people, we have some folks getting their construction supervisor's license right now, and we're trying to incentivize people to go down and obtain those certificates. I think it allows you or exposes you to different areas of the business that you might not be on your day to day, and it's going to create more career path development as well.
Yeah, it makes sense if you're always looking towards that as well. All right, I want to go back to you a little bit. So what are you working on currently? I mean, you're 3 years in, you're now doing a transition, you said, and kind of bringing a new head of operations in that's going to be reporting to you, it sounds like. How's that transition going, and what are you working on to make that transition work?
Yeah, I think it's going great. Kelly might tell you, she's still trying to add value to it, which I think she already is. It's really and coming into a new culture, a new business, understanding what's what and wrapping your head around things, which, you know, I'm very excited about that. I think that I'm at a place too, trying to realize, right, slow down, Tim. Let's make a list here and prioritize. You don't have to do everything at once. My brother and I recently went through a 360 assessment with Dr. Ed, I'll call him, that has gone through and he's interviewed some folks around us, and we did a Hogan assessment and really drilled into who we are and where are we going. And so that's been, we're still going through that process here, which has been hugely impactful for us as far as being aware, self-awareness.
Yeah, the leadership. Have you read the book Leadership and Self-Deception?
No.
It's a really great read. It's one that I had to read just to grow myself as a leader back when I was building 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And it was just some of the kind of self-awareness that we need to be as a leader, right? We sometimes have our blind spots, and it can be super helpful for sure. All right, let's go back to the 21, 22-year-old Tim Duffney. I want you to give him some advice. What advice would you give the 22-year-old that you know to be true today, but you wish you'd known back then?
So many things. You know, I find myself in trying to juggle too many things, and it's the focus, which I just kind of come back to, really, the teaching of Don DeBondi. The understanding the mind and awareness is, I just encourage anyone to read his book there. It's so powerful and it's so simple, and it's the things you're not taught as a kid. But yeah, just understanding you have control of your awareness and your focus, and the powerful, powerful tool.
I like it. Tim Duffney, managing partner for Duffney Builders. Thanks very much for sharing with us on the Second Command podcast.
Glad me. This is fun.
That was awesome.
You've been listening to Second in Command, brought to you by COO Alliance founder Cameron Harold. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to like, share, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and our other podcast streaming platforms. For more best practices from industry-leading COOs, visit COOalliance.com.